Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. I look back at the second day's play from Trent Bridge. Simon, I'm wondering whether Ben Stokes is now going to be remembered in the same light, the same category as Nasser Hussain, David Gower and Len Hutton, who all put Australia into bat. Nasser famously in Brisbane, and the opposition scored piles of runs, in Nasser's case 400 odd, and in Gower's and Hutton's case over 500, because Stokes has put New Zealand into bat here in Trent Bridge. New Zealand have made 553 all out in the best part of 2 days. I am, of course, being slightly tongue-in-cheek, but it's a slightly ignominious group to be part of, isn't it?
Well, I suppose it is, yeah. I mean, in the case of Len Hutton and David Gower, Australia made just over 600, 601. In the case of Nasser, not quite as many as that. But, you know, it does stand out, doesn't it? Put the opposition in, they get 550. Michael Vaughan was very relieved on the second day because he's off the podium, because he was actually third on the list. He put Sri Lanka into bat in Gaul and they made 499. And, you know, he said, well, it was a bit damp early on and we got a couple of early wickets. But, of course, then, you know, Sri Lanka in the home conditions, they were very strong back in the day and racked up a huge score. England didn't actually lose that match in which Michael put the opposition in. But, of course, the other three that you mentioned, Australia went on to win the game. I suppose that the whole point will be is, can England save the game yards? If England don't lose the match and they make a good fist of it with the bat, and, you know, they make a big score, then Stokes will say, well, look, you can sort of understand why I did what I did, because we thought the pitch would stay good. You know, we can get runs on this surface as well. We thought we could get early wickets. That didn't happen. So it's really about England's batting effort today, I suppose.
Mm, yeah. And actually, Tom Latham would have put England into bat had New Zealand won the toss. I suppose, I mean, just watching New Zealand bowl for that last sort of hour or so on the second day, you sort of feel they do have slightly more variety in their attack. They don't have a spinner. Mm. They don't have a frontline spinner. But they do have a left-arm over bowler, which England don't, and somebody of 6'8", Kyle Jameson. So, in a way, they've got slightly more variety for this particular situation, although, as I say, they haven't got a spinner. This kind of stuff happens, doesn't it? And I could totally see why Stokes put New Zealand into bat. We said this yesterday, actually. I sort of forgive him for that decision, and it just didn't work out. And actually, you know, you have to hand it to New Zealand, don't you? I mean, 39 for 6 and 48 for 7 or something in the first test. They come back to very strongly into get themselves into a winning position, obviously lose it in the end, having not had really much preparation, players coming from the IPL and so on. Then they lose Kane Williamson, their captain, to COVID, and that lose the toss as well at the second test, and they've come back and scored 550, and I thought they batted superbly. You know, you could say, well, England's bowling was, you know, too short, or they needed a bloke who bowls 90 miles an hour. Well, you know, perhaps both of those are true, but the quality of the batting, particularly Daryl Mitchell, Tom Blundell, and the others, really, you know, and you look at their records, people who you don't think of particularly, someone like Henry Nicholls, who He averages over 40 in Test cricket. Tom Blundell, the same. Tom Latham. And so, you know, they are incredible. And you know, they've had to sort of rearrange their side. They brought in bowlers of the quality of Matt Henry, and they've still got Neil Wagner on the sidelines, who's got over 200 Test wickets. So, you know, they just are quality cricketers, aren't they?
And you mentioned Tom Blundell there, sort of slip of the tongue. He will be averaging over 40 if he keeps on like he's been going in this series. And nearly got 100 at Lords, and he got 100 yesterday, out for 106. I wonder whether this series will be remembered as the big moment series. You know, sometimes, you know, talk about players playing well over a period, but then sometimes incidents settle sporting contests, don't they? If, you know, there is this fine margin. If this had happened, then it would have been completely different. And we had that if moment, I suppose, at Lords when Colin de Granholm overstepped, reprieved Ben Stokes, and he was able to produce a decent partnership with Joe Root. And of course, in this match, we had the Joe Root drop catch. Daryl Mitchell made 190, but he was, you know, dropped by Root on three, a chance that Root, you know, he would gobble, you know, nearly every time. You know, it was really a real surprise when he dropped the catch. And so, you know, England putting New Zealand into bat, and that would have been around about 170 for five. And that's a very different story. You know, you get 500 from there, you know, get 550 from 170 for five. Well, some, you know, some teams could do it. The old Australian team probably, you know, back in the day in the 1990s and early 2000s might have been able to do it, but not many teams. So, you know, it's interesting listening to Ben Stokes in his post-match press conference at the end of this game. You know, he might say, well, look, we put the opposition in. They should have been 170 for five. Mm. And then you say, well, hold on, then my decision looks a bit different. So sometimes you've got to look at those individual mistakes. The process actually, you know, might be right. I mean, well, not that England bowled particularly well on the first day. I mean, New Zealand got away a bit, didn't they? 80-odd for no wicket. And it looked, you know, a poor decision. It was a flat pitch.
Yeah.
Overheads, you know, fine, not much overhead, and the wind as well. And I think the wind was a factor. It's not, you know, not easy to get the. We talked about this yesterday. It's not easy to get the ball to swing consistently when it's very, very blustery. So, you know, you have to sort of break it down in a way. You say, oh yeah, they got 500, and it looks awful, but there are some mitigating factors. Because Mitchell was dropped again yesterday. That cost England another pile of runs. He was dropped by Potts on the long on boundary, a catch that, you know, I think most people on the ground thought he'd taken, actually, because he just held the position. It looked as if he just nestled in his hands from a distance. Those who were a long way away from it thought he'd caught it. But when you sort of see the close-up replay, he went through his hands, hit his knee, and then pinged onto the boundary.
Yeah. I mean, that was a sort of a very... it must have been a frustrating moment for Leach. And actually Stokes as well, because I thought Stokes' captaincy was good. You know, I thought, for instance, when England started on the first day, he posted a mid-off and an extra cover, no backward point to the seamers, encouraging them to pitch it up, which they sort of did, and then they got driven a bit, but, you know, it was the right idea, sort of encouraging them to bowl as full as possible to get wickets. Well, I thought his use of Leach was good. You know, for instance, he didn't just give him the sort of statutory one over before lunch or tea kind of thing. He invested a bit of faith in him. He kept the fielders in when the batsmen were quite positive and going over the top. He still encouraged them to go over the top, and actually that is the cause in the end of the possible chance, or a chance to Matthew Potts, which, as you say, he floored. By then he had put the fielders back, but he still kept sort of let the mid off in, and when he eventually Leach got his wicket of Tom Blundell, it was because Stokes, despite seeing Leach hit over the top a few times, kept his own position at mid off fairly close in, rather than being persuaded to just put everybody back on the boundary, which actually Joe Root has tended to do when captaining Jack Leach. So I think generally Stokes has been quite inventive and positive generally in his captaincy. And it just, in this case, England didn't take their catches. There were clearly some obvious misses which would have made a difference. And the pitch was flat and the New Zealanders played really well. Now, England have to match that, and that they certainly showed the inclinations that they would be able to in that last session. There was a few streaky boundaries, but again, there's this positivity, and maybe people will say, oh, you know, batsmen should just grind it out. Well, perhaps this is not the pitch to do that. Perhaps this is the pitch where you do go to be positive and frustrate the bowlers because you'll get there going for four and over and you can't keep men in the cordon because, you know, the scoreboard is rattling along. So maybe that is the best approach.
Yeah, I was quietly impressed by Alex Lees and Ollie Pope yesterday. We were both playing in, you know, different styles, although I thought Lees is his highest test score so far, so he's 34 not out. Okay, no great shakes. But I thought there was a sort of positivity about his batting in defence as well as attack. He did have a slice of good fortune. Really, Mitchell should have taken the catch at slip when he was on 12. It was a bit like the Mitchell one with Joe Root dropping it, and, you know, not dissimilar in terms of degree of difficulty. I mean, anyone who's fielded in the slips will know that no slip catch is straightforward because it just comes at you in a sort of blink of an eye. But I was quite impressed with Lees. I thought he, for the first time yesterday, he looked as though he could be a test player. I thought before that he just looked slightly as if he was, you know, really either out of his depth or really struggling to come to terms with it. But I thought yesterday I was you know, really quite impressed with him. So a big day for him today. Although, of course, if he had gone on, you know, been dismissed on 12 like he should have been, we'd say, well, you know, there we go, it's another low score. As for Ollie Pope, well, he's going to entertain us at number three and probably frustrate us as well. He played two or three magnificent shots. What I thought was good about him yesterday, there was a period where they really dried up the runs against him. He couldn't score. And he didn't play a sort of ultra-aggressive shot. He waited for the bad ball and then he drilled Henry through the offside for four. But then, you know, not long afterwards, in the same over, he got a short ball and he top-edged it over the keeper. So you almost see the sort of the best and the sort of most frenetic and frantic of Ollie Pope. And of course, he was dropped as well, nicked one to the left of Mitchell at slip, and the keeper probably should have gone for it, Blundell, and didn't. And Mitchell could have caught it. It was quite a difficult chance away to his left. So I think that's the encouraging thing for New Zealand, is that yesterday evening on a pitch that's pretty good still, they were able to create three really solid chances. And if they'd taken all three of them, and they could have done, you know, England would be, 75 for three, and in big trouble in this match. So there's the encouragement, I think, for New Zealand on the third day.
I wonder if there's an issue with the background or something, because, you know, both teams have missed chances here. And, you know, I fielded at Trent Bridge, and I don't particularly notice any difference to the seeing sort of background to any other ground. But sometimes you do have issues with seats at a particular level or a certain colour or something. I don't know. So, funnily enough, it's one of those grounds.
What was a particularly bad seeing ground you've played on yours? Can you think of a particularly bad seeing ground?
Funnily enough, actually, the oval was always bad. I don't know why. The sort of red seats or something seemed to be at side on. But, in fact, the worst for batting was definitely Trent Bridge, where you have at one end people obviously sitting in front of the sight screen at the pavilion end. And that is, for some reason, Trent Bridge is always worse. I mean, they have it at Headingley and other grounds, but at Trent Bridge, for some reason, that maybe the people's heads are a bit higher or the sight screen's a little bit lower. Quite often, I remember facing Franklin Stevenson for playing for Notts at Trent Bridge, and his arm came straight out of a dark window in the committee room above the sight screen. You know, I couldn't see Franklin Stevenson bowling at the best of times, and that just made it worse. So, you know, Trent Bridge is one of those grounds where, I don't know, it seems to sometimes cause problems for fielders. Perhaps it's because there are more chances generated there as well.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Let's talk about just for a little bit about Jack Leach, who took 2 for 140 in the New Zealand innings. He got that wicket, as I say, of Blundell in the end after a lot of painstaking work, and then picked up a second just at the end there where Matt Henry ladled one to cover. And, you know, it's funny, but I wrote a piece in the Sunday Times about Jack Leach today, and I'm I started out thinking, well, you know, he's not that good, is he? And there are 10 a penny spinners of that quality in the 1980s and 90s in county cricket, and you know, he's nothing special really, and should England persevere with him? But in fact, I came round to thinking, looking at his stats, that this was only his 125th over playing Test cricket in England. So he, before this Test, he'd only bowled 100 overs in Test cricket in England. He hasn't played a Test in England or bowled in a Test in England since 2019. He's been, you know, the kind of bring me in, leave me out, resident 12th man for a lot of that time, and also had, obviously, you know, issues with injuries and illness and so on. So he's had a very stop-start career, and actually, the difficulty of being a finger spinner in the modern game as well is writ large with him, because you know, the quality of batting, which has been brought about by a combination of T20, bigger bats, smaller boundaries, you know, better repertoires, etc., it makes a finger spinner's life tough. And he has got the one advantage which finger spinners of the 1980s and 90s didn't have, which is DRS. And so there's an inclination, I think, for the modern finger spinner to try and beat the batsman on the inside edge rather than the outside edge. If you're a left-arm spinner, you know, you should be traditionally trying to get the edge and get caught slips and things with the right-handers. But actually, there's more chance these days of getting wickets by beating the inside edge and getting LBWs. And Leach nearly did a couple of times. It didn't quite get enough turn on the ball to get the ball to ricochet back towards the stumps and get the umpire's verdict. There were narrow shaves. But so, you know, I'm quite forgiving about Jack Leach. I think he did pretty well. All I'd say is, one, he doesn't really turn the ball. And if he did, and that may be to do with his grip, it may be to do with his arm position, which is slightly beyond the vertical. And if you talk to someone like Phil Tufnell, as I know you do every day, his arm is slightly less than the vertical. So he comes from sort of 11 o'clock left arm round, whereas Leach comes from 1 o'clock, if you could imagine a clock of bowling round the wicket to a right-hander. And Tufnell was able to get that slight drift in and get his wrist around the ball to spin it, to get some over sort of side and overspin more than Leach, who's more of a roller, really, I'd say. And I guess the other thing, just to say, is the art of spin, which was handed down to the likes of Tuffers from, you know, John Embry, Phil Edmonds and people before that. And, you know, Graham Swan benefited from somebody like Ashley Mallett in Australia. And, you know, lots of spinners have benefited from people they've played with who've kind of learnt the art from somebody before them. It's sort of handed down over time. And I'm not sure Leach has necessarily had that benefit, because there just aren't that many good spinners knocking around the game anymore to pass on that nous, that bowling knack, which involves, you know, going slightly wider the crease, going perhaps bowling the odd one from slightly further back, a bit more flight, a bit more changing your trajectory slightly, just being the guile. The flight, we used to call it F&G, flight and guile. And there's just that lacking in Leach's bowling, but maybe he can acquire it with more bowling.
Well, that's a very good point about more bowling and how much bowling he's done. I mean, Michael Vaughan, he came up with some really interesting stats yesterday, saying at the age of 25, he was trying to compare bowlers. You know, how much do you think Leach bowled at the age of 25, and how much do you think, say, someone like Tuffers has bowled at the age of 25? And Michael himself said at the age of 25, he described himself as a part-time off-spinner, he himself had bowled 1,000 more balls than Jack Leach at the same age. And Tuffers had bowled something like, you know, at least twice as many, if not three times as many deliveries at the age of 25. They had that bowling at a young age. And probably Jack Leach has had to fight to bowl, really, hasn't he? You know, down in the early days of his Somerset career, because the pitches weren't particularly conducive. Then they changed a bit, and so he got his chance, and he got his bag of wickets, and he became prominent as a result of that, because of the pitches down at Taunton. But generally speaking, around the country, there isn't that much help. There hasn't been that much help for spin bowlers. I suppose you look also as well at who else is out there, and the cupboard is pretty thin One thing I would say, Yoz, we had Moeen Ali with us, and we've got him with us on Test Match Special over the course of the weekend at Trent Bridge. And you know, we asked him the question yesterday. You know, Brendan McCullum, he knows him well from his time at Royal Challengers Bangalore in 2018, and he said Brendan McCullum is a very hard man to say no to. And you know, there was a strong implication from Moeen yesterday that he might consider coming out of Test Match retirement, especially with the tour of Pakistan coming up in the autumn. You know, he said, "I'd love to go to Pakistan," but I mean, he probably will with the white ball team, but will he with the red ball team as well? So, I mean, he certainly was not ruling it out. It wasn't like, "Oh well, yeah, I might think about it." It was a bit more than that. Mm. Anyway, so it's a watch this space at the moment, who has taken close on 200 wickets.
That's good to hear, and we could definitely do with Moeen for sure. You know, brilliant bowler, fantastic cricketer, great character, and. Actually, just going back to sort of the art of spin, character is important. You know, you bowl with your character. You don't have the assets as a spinner of pace or height or a bouncer, you know, to kind of intimidate a batsman. So you have to try and fox him in some other way or deceive him or, you know, conjure a wicket some other way. And if you look at the great spinners, the spinners that have starred in the game over the last 20 years or so, obviously, Shane Warne is the classic example, but I would cite, you know, someone like Graham Swan as well, and even Monty as having strong personalities. Swan, you know, was quite cocksure, sort of strutted around. You could feel he knew he had the batsman in his pocket, and he let the batsman know that. And Monty, you know, fiery and aggressive and kind of relentless in his style of bowling. Even going back further, Tuffers, you know, slightly, you think of him as a slightly comedy character, but he conjured wickets. You know, he always sort of swindled the batsmen out of their wicket with a clever bit of flight of hand, the ball on a string. I mean, you know, I used to face Tuffers in the nets all the time. And of course, we all used to try and slog him. We used to get down the wicket and have tried to hack him out of the net. I couldn't get to the pitch, you know. And he laughed at me because he said, "I can see you coming, mate. I can see you coming." And I would, you know, I'd be hustling up the wicket trying to hack him into the Lord's Indoor School, getting inside edges to mid wicket or missing it completely or something. He had a real art of, you know, just spotting when the batsman was coming and deceiving them. Now you look at Leach, who, to me, you know, looks at the moment very intense character. He's concentrating on just getting the ball down there consistently. You know, it doesn't look as if he's having much fun, in a way, at the moment. Maybe that will come over time. But watching someone like... he did have a little bit of fun with Trent Bolt at the end there. Bolt managed to get him for a couple of fours, and I was sort of thinking, maybe he hasn't got much flight and guile. But then... he did deceive him a couple of times and nearly had him stumped. So, you know, there's some signs there, I think, with Leach that he could find that art of flight and guile and getting batsmen, you know, teasing batsmen out of their wickets. But it does take a bit of time to find it and actually be confident of using it.
Well, one thing that we've seen with this Trent Bridge pitch, good for batting, but there is something there for the spinner. And I wonder if the ball will turn. Now, you say, well, New Zealand don't have a spinner. They left out Ajaz Patel. I think they would quite like him today and in the final innings, but he's not there. They've got Michael Bracewell, who shaped very well with the bat yesterday in his first test innings. You could look at this one of two ways with Bracewell's batting. One, well, he came in at 400 for five or whatever it was. Yeah, 405 for five, which is a nice position to come in. But he had to sit with his pads on for goodness knows how long, watching a partnership of 236. You know, it's quite draining, actually, in your first test match to wait and wait and wait. He does have the experience, of course, because he's 31 years of age. But he, according to Jeremy Coney, he does give the ball a bit of a rip. So I wonder whether he can get in the game. England have quite a lot of left-handers in their lineup. I mean, he's not got a great first-class record. He's taken 27 wickets to 47. You know, by English standards, you say, well, you know, we can't have a bowler like that playing, you know, as our main spinner. But he's done quite well of late. So I don't know whether New Zealand. I mean, I think they'd love Patel, wouldn't they? If they could sort of sub someone out off like you could in those old one-day internationals that they were experimented with for a while. I think they might bring Patel into the team for someone, you know, a batter, because you know they've got all these runs in the bank. bank, no Patel. So interesting to see how Michael Bracewell goes. So how do you see the position of the game? I think there's a few people saying, well, look, hold on, 643 runs have been scored on the first 2 days for 11 wickets. It's going to be a draw. Did you see enough from New Zealand last night to think, well, you know, one decent session and they could put the skids under England's batting and then have a huge lead and they can then put pressure on England on the final day?
That's a good question. I think that England will get 400. I don't think they'll get more.
Okay.
And the problem is they've got a long tail again. You know, they've got, who is it, Jack Leach probably at number 8 or Stuart Broad or whoever. So, you know, they have got a long tail. So, you know, the top six have got to do the lion's share. And obviously they've Crawley failed. So a lot of pressure on the top six. But I think on this pitch, they should be capable of getting England to close to 400, which will be a lead. You know, New Zealand have a lead of 120. It's then a question of if they've got enough time to set England a target, I suppose. So I think there's plenty of opportunity for England's batsmen in this track, and they should be able to prove that they are capable of making 400. And if they can't on here, then oh dear.
Yeah, well, if they get sort of 380, 400, like, you know, if you're talking about dead 400, then that's a lead of 150, 170 for New Zealand.
Still a decent lead.
And then, well, it's a decent lead, and the rate of scoring in this match has been high because of the fast outfield. So presumably, if England get about 380, 400, which is not, you know, it's not a poor first inning score generally, but it won't be enough in this game, then New Zealand will have a lead of 150 with a whole day to build on it. The fourth day, get a lead of, I don't know, 350, something like that, and then 380, and put England into bat on the evening of the fourth day, and you say to England, well, you've got a day and a bit to save the test match, and then you're batting on a fifth day pitch that might be a bit more precarious. Okay, Bracewell might come into it with his ripping off spin. Then you're under pressure. So I think that today will go a long way to settling the game. Mm. And if England at the close of play, they need to be something like 400 for 5, something like that, 400 for 6. If they're bowled out for 400 or they're 400 for 8 or 380 for 8, something like that, then New Zealand have still got an opportunity in this game thanks to their huge first inning score. It feels like we're slightly battling against the draw now. It's a sort of race against time. But, the other scenario, of course, is that England get bowled out for 280, and then that is, you know, big problems for them.
That's curtains.
And New Zealand could enforce the follow. Yeah, they could enforce the follow-on if they wanted to. I'm not sure they would. I think they'd bat again and get a really big score and then give England four sessions to try to save the game. So today's going to go a long way, I think. We'll have a pretty good idea by the close of play on the third day, where this game is going.
Yeah. Well, I would say, if I was Brendan McCullum, I'd say, lads, fantastic opportunity today to bat all day. Seize it. And we'll be back later today to see if they did. In the meantime, thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.